going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive. Up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
That's right, it is the Going Deep podcast. I am Donovan Bennett, and today we're going deep on all things Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award. That's right, probably by now you've heard about it. It's an honor by the NHL and Hyundai to make sure we honor people who are making sure the game of hockey is fun and accessible for all. Now, for the second year, there will be two award winners, one in the U.S. and one in Canada. The award winners will each receive $25,000 in prize money, and that's to be donated to a charity of their choice. Now, as you'll find out, because I interview a bunch of them on this episode of the show, most of them have founded their own charities specifically around making sure that hockey is inclusive and diverse. The four remaining finalists, they deserve some respect and love as well. Two, they will each receive a $5,000 prize to be donated to a charity of their choice. The award winners will be announced in June during the Stanley Cup playoffs. You'll be able to see that during our coverage of the Stanley Cup playoffs here in Canada on Rogers Sportsnet. Now, obviously, the award is named after Willie O'Ree, the NHL forward who on January 18th, 1958, became the first Black player to ever compete in the National Hockey League. O'Ree, as we've talked about on this podcast, and as I'm sure you all know at this point, lost his sight in his right eye at a young age, but went on to play pro hockey for 21 years. And for more than two decades since, he has served as the NHL's diversity ambassador, which means essentially he's traveling across North America to schools and hockey programs to share his story and hopefully use hockey as a platform to build character and teach life skills, use his influence to foster positive values and change. The exact reason why he was a worthy candidate to be inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame in 2018 and the exact type of work that the individuals on this podcast are doing. So after no further ado, let's talk to some of those individuals. We're going to talk to the Canadians nominated for the award. First up, Mark DeMontis from Toronto. He's the founder of Canadian Blind Hockey and is a gold medalist with Canada's national blind hockey team. DeMontis founded Canadian Blind Hockey to build a bigger blind hockey community and to help more kids play the sport. And I wanted to understand from him what that journey has been like and what some of the barriers of entry to the sport have been. So let's go deep with Mark DeMontis, a nominee for the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award. So Mark, talk to me about your relationship with the game of hockey and how you came to fall in love with it.
You know, growing up in Toronto, like most kids, you know, I fell in love with the game. I had the chance to play minor hockey, my community at Weston, where I grew up, and fell in love with it instantly, like most kids, and wanted to play in the NHL. And I grew up playing in the Greater Toronto Hockey League, and had a lot of opportunities to play the game at a competitive level, to travel, and to set goals for myself. And my ultimate goal was to play college hockey and go to the NCAA. And I was 17. This was back in 2004. When I was unexpectedly diagnosed with this rare eye condition, LHON or Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy, and just abruptly ended, my NHL dream, and it put me on another path.
How did your family, not just yourself, deal with that diagnosis and the new realities that you would have?
You know, I think my family really went to the beat of the drum how I was feeling. And I mean, I was in super denial at the time. I was, I didn't realize how severe the sight loss was. And as each day passed, I mean, for like 6 months, I lost like 95% of my sight. And so I kept positive, but I think deep down it was tough. And so for my family, I think that they did everything they could to be supportive, and they were there for me, especially through those tough times. But I mean, I really tried to just be positive and keep myself really busy. And I went off to Western to study, and so I was a couple hours away from home and in a new space, a new environment. And at that point in my life, you know, when I learned about blind hockey, I think they really started seeing that I was starting to fall in love with the game again, but also falling in love with life again.
I imagine staying positive easier said than done, especially for your love for the game. Did you feel like at that time hockey was robbed from you?
You know, that's exactly it, Donovan. It was like, I felt like I got robbed. I felt like it was, you know, it was taken away from me. I didn't do anything wrong. It's not like I committed a crime or like I, you know, I got injured physically. You know, I would say, you know, blindness chose me. I didn't choose blindness. And that was tough for me because my hands were tied. Like there was nothing I could have done about it. There's nothing, you know, through those months, every single day when I woke up and I was losing more sight, I was able to do. But then I also realized that I was no different than anyone else out there who deals with sight loss, and especially kids who deal with this adversity daily. And so I think discovering blind hockey made me, you know, renew my passion. It gave me a second shift, I always say, to get back in the game, but gave me a lot more purpose too, to want to do something about this game that no one had ever heard of.
Well, you not only discovered it, you channeled that purpose into doing more work. You launched what was formerly known as Courage Canada, now known as Canadian Blind Hockey. What was the catalyst to starting that, and how did you find it in those early days?
You know, when I was going through some tough times, and I was really fortunate that I was taken under the wing of the late Herb Carnegie and his daughter Bernice Carnegie, who's a mentor of mine to this day. And you know, Herb and I shared a common bond of both having sight loss. For Herb, it was glaucoma. For me, LHON. And I could never relate to the adversity Herb faced due to discrimination in the game. But the one thing that we had in common was adversity in the game. And so I started actually speaking to schools and learning more about the Future Aces Creed. And one of the words that stuck out to me was courage. And that's how Courage Canada was born, was inspired through the Future Aces Creed. And at that point I said, you know, I learned about all the hockey schools Herb had started. And I said to myself, I would love to start hockey schools for kids who are blind. And at that point in 2009, when I was 22 years old, I decided to rollerblade from Toronto to Vancouver on this Courage Canada campaign to raise funds to kickstart these programs.
And over the last decade, how can you compare and contrast where it is now to where it was when you started it?
You know, when we started it, it was started, I would say, at the dining room table and in our home in Weston and with my family. And it was an idea. And I think it was me having, funny enough, this vision, so to speak, of wanting to build a community across the country and globally for blind hockey players, very similar to the community of hockey that I had growing up in my own backyard in Toronto. You know, all that comes from the power of community. And so then it was just an idea, and you know, like most people, when they have such a big, bold vision or idea, you get a lot of doubters and people who maybe don't have the same confidence you do in your own vision. And so I had to really block out a lot of that noise and a lot of that distraction, especially telling people I was going to skate across the country. I mean, that wasn't easy to sell. And then, you know, to see it now, you know, 15 years after we started the organization, 10 years after the national tournament and endless, countless regional and local community programs, over thousands of kids who are blind and partially sighted playing the game and so many adult programs now across the country. I'm seeing this dream I had become a reality. And it's pretty emotional too for me because I knew what it was like when we had, you know, no money, you know, in the organization and we were trying to borrow skates for kids You know, we had no sponsors. We were doing anything we could just to get this started. So from those early days and some of those sacrifices to now seeing this thriving, national, reputable, registered charity doing this phenomenal work in communities, super proud of, like, again, just everyone's effort, the collective effort of everyone to get it to where it is today.
Now, at its core, hockey is hockey, but can you, for our audience, go into some detail about the differences in the blind hockey game as opposed to what they're accustomed to watching on a nightly basis?
Yeah, so blind hockey is hockey. It's no different, I always say. It's in the same rink, same smell, same camaraderie. A few minor modifications and adaptations. So number one, the puck is a noise-making puck. It's larger. It's metal hollow with ball bearings inside. And so players who are blind or partially sighted, like myself, can obviously utilize their hearing to locate the puck, you know, around the ice. Nets are 1 foot shorter than traditional nets. So they're 3 feet instead of 4 feet in height. And that's to keep shots lower, make it easier for goalies, because all goalies in blind hockey are totally blind, which is super impressive and inspiring in itself. Two other minor adaptations. One is there's a one pass rule. So when the offensive team's on the attack and they gain the blue line, in the offensive zone, they need to make one pass to a teammate, which is followed by a high pitch whistle from a referee that makes the team eligible to score. And what this does is signifies to teammates on the attack, but also on the defense, including the blind goaltender, that a shot could happen anytime. And so that makes the game a bit of an equal level playing field for all athletes. And the other minor modification is that no team ever wears a white jersey, I guess because of the color of the ice being white and boards being white. So it's always a high contrast yellow, very similar to what you'd see, often at a transit station or tactile surfaces in a high contrast yellow, no different than in hockey, making the game accessible for players who are blind and partially sighted. But if you haven't seen blind hockey, I mean, I really think people should check it out. I think it's the coolest game there is. I'm not being biased about that. I just think it's just so Canadian to have people who are blind play hockey. And I think until you see it, it really defeats the misconceptions of stigma around what it means to be blind or partially sighted. Most people think that people are just at home sitting on the couch listening to the radio. And I can tell you that's not the case when you watch this game.
I love that you brought up the misconceptions and misnomers, because I would love for you, if you could, just to talk about the community of vision impaired or partially sighted Canadians and give us a window on some of the aspects of that community that the average Canadian might not understand or appreciate.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of misconceptions. I mean, there's only so many people that can say they had a friend or met somebody in their life they've come across who was blind or partially sighted. And, you know, it's still today I experience, like, when I go out or meet somebody, I tell them that I'm visually impaired. I mean, I get a lot of questions, and it used to frustrate me a little bit, but then I realized over time, like, not many people have had the chance to talk to someone or meet somebody who's partially sighted. And, you know, you get the typical questions all the time, like, oh, are your senses heightened, or, how do you get around, or can you see me, kind of thing? How many fingers am I holding up? Like, you get all those types of questions. But I think the power of all this is the education piece, right? Like, being able to educate people on the fact that people who are blind can play hockey. If they can play hockey, they can kind of do anything. They can contribute in their community. They can be in the workplace. They can have a family. And these are all things that the blind community already does in Canada. They already are participating in the workforce. They already are playing sports and recreation in adaptive forms. And, you know, I have teammates of mine, and when I look around my national team dressing room, the range of what people do, there's engineers. One of my teammates, our captain, Kelly Sirbu, is a judge. When I look at, the work that people do in the room, from the corporate level to just what they do even in the trades, there's so much talent and skill that when I look around the dressing room and I hear us talking about what we do off the ice, it's a I really think it's a symbolic representation of what the blind community does across the country in life. So I think hockey is a metaphor in many ways for Canada, but I also think it's a catalyst for change, because when someone then loses their sight and they're like, well, how am I going to have a career, or how am I going to have a family? These are the same things I thought after I lost my sight. You know, when you meet people now, your life changes right away.
It's not lost on me that you're up for an award named after Willie O'Ree, who obviously played with impaired vision. You mentioned your personal connection to Herb Carnegie and the vision issues that he had. What would it mean to you, given, you know, that symmetry in stories, if you were the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award winner?
You know, I'm just so honored to be a finalist. Like, I didn't expect to ever be a finalist, and I never did any of this to get awards, or I really did this because of the impact. And the impact I know it has had and will have on people. And so as much as it would be this honor to be the recipient of the award, what I'm really excited about more than anything is all this exposure for the sport. Like the fact that, like, even just like chatting with you, Donovan, like if someone's out there who's blind or partially sighted can find out about the sport that didn't know about it, that could change their life. Like, that's to me what's most important. I mean, it's an honor to be a finalist, to have my name anywhere near Willie O'Ree's, who's done so much in the hockey world and diversity and inclusion over the past so many years. The fact he played the game with one eye, it's super inspiring. And I continue to educate myself on his story and recognize what the barriers he had to go through, just like Herb. But again, to be the recipient, I mean, that'd be a really amazing honor, but it's already an honor to be a finalist. And again, I just hope through this whole experience of the nomination over the past number of weeks and the next few weeks that people will be inspired, and maybe we'll find some new blind hockey players, or maybe someone will just be inspired in their own life, even if they're not blind, to do something or try something new.
Well, let's leave them with some tangible information, whether they are listening to this and are impaired in terms of their vision or they're not. Where should they go for more information, more resources?
Well, to learn more about blind hockey, the number one thing I would say is go to the website, canadianblindhockey.com, and go to the YouTube channel if you want to check out blind hockey, and especially Canada-USA battles. Those are always good. That's canadianblindhockey.com, you know, on social media everywhere. Now Canadian Blind Hockey is doing an amazing job at that. And the Willie O'Ree Award itself is nhl.com/O'Ree, O-R-E-E award, where you can vote there. The importance of education, I hope you enjoy learning all about blind hockey.
Well, I've enjoyed learning even more about your story and the work that you're doing and how important it is. So thank you retroactively and proactively for everything you're doing for the game and for Canadians.
Thanks, Donovan. Appreciate all you do in the game as well.
Thank you so much to Mark DeMontis. Next up, we talk to Alan Hurley-High, a resident of Hamilton, who's a volunteer with the Hamilton District Sledge Hockey Association, which teaches sledge hockey to boys and girls of all playing abilities. He's a longtime hockey player himself and found this community after his own son became an amputee at a young age. For the past 8 years, he's dedicated his time and made it his life work to make sure that the sport is welcoming and help build up this community. So from Alan, I wanted to figure out what the journey has been like for himself and his family and what the ability to play hockey has given his son. Let's go deep. So, Alan, talk to me about your upbringing as a kid and how hockey played a role in your and your family's story.
So, basically, I learned how to crawl, walk, and then my dad had me on skates the minute there was balance there. I played all the way from when I was 4 years old right up until my minor years were done at the age of 18, and my dad coached me all the way through. So hockey was basically just in our blood. And then I decided to join coaching with him because, you know, it was kind of a good father-son thing to do. And 23 years later, I stopped coaching stand up and devoted more of it to the sledge hockey. I tried to balance the stand up coaching and sledge hockey for about 7 years, but it was a lot. It was 6 nights a week at the arena.
Imagine having that relationship through the sport with your dad. You envisioned having a similar relationship with your children via the sport. Was that the case, when you had your son Dylan?
I think so, yes. Like, when we had him, of course, you know, I can't wait, he's going to play hockey and this and that. And then at the age of 9 months, when he caught his meningitis, and a result of that, he lost his left leg below the knee, his right foot, the tips off his right hand. We got prosthetics, and I put skates on them, tried everything to get him up and skating, and quickly realized that, maybe hockey just couldn't be his sport. And then when he was around 6 years old, we had a family that said, hey, you should come out and try sledge hockey. And the minute we got him in a sled, both of us were just like, oh man, here we go. Like, it's hockey time.
What did it feel like for you, thinking you had lost that opportunity to have a relationship with him via the sport, to be on the ice, to be pushing him? What did you get out of it?
At first, you're frustrated, and it's like, well, now what? So we start thinking other sports and this and that. But then once we found hockey and got to get on the ice and play hockey with my son, it was words really can't describe the feeling. It was just like a big high five, I guess you could say. Like, it meant everything that we were able to share that hockey experience. And then as he's gotten older in it, we can get out there and pass the puck around and skate around and do some drill, and it's fun. It's awesome, actually.
And now you get to provide that same experience for other people. When people think of the Hamilton Sledgehammers, in a community like Hamilton, which is so rabid with the sport of hockey, what do you want them to think of when they hear and see that name?
I would just love more people to know that we're here. So, like, my son and I, we go skating, like public skating, quite often. And people are like, oh, well, where do you play? And we're like, well, right here in Hamilton. We have three teams. And people are like, oh, my God, how do we not know? And just to have more and more people to be able to at least come out and see us and, pass it off to a friend of a friend that may have somebody that'd be interested in trying the game. And just that's what we do. We host like try it sledge days to get people to come out and just try it for the first time. And usually if you try it for the first time, you're hooked. If hockey's in your blood, you're hooked.
How did COVID impact the association and the ability to get awareness and numbers out?
It was a disaster for our association and many associations through the Ontario sledge hockey. For example, like in Hamilton, we had, I think it was 64 players post COVID, and then pre COVID, I think we were down to like mid 20s. And then now we're back at about 34, 35 with a few newcomers coming next year that we already know of. So it's bouncing back, but yeah, COVID definitely just ruined the sport, right?
No question. We heard what you get out of, this. What does your son get out of it? How does he benefit from being able to have a relationship with the sport?
He lives and eats and sleeps, breathes sledge hockey. They got this like little group chat with all like a bunch of kids around Ontario, and they're all just going back and forth, and just being kids involved in hockey, like it's really humbling when you sit back and just like look at them go. Like, they're 14 years old, and they're talking about the bar down and all this and that, and it's hilarious to me. Like, it means a lot to me, and I know it means a lot to him that we have that something, I guess you could say.
What does it mean to you to be nominated for an award named after Willie O'Ree, someone who obviously dealt with his own disability while being in the game?
Oh, to have my name in the same sentence is still trying to take it all in. It's incredible. What Willie did through the sport of hockey and like breaking the color barrier and having like the vision impairment just goes to show that, you know, anything is possible if you just kind of work hard at it. And if you really want it, it's there. You just, you got to go get it. And just to, like I said, to be nominated and mentioned just with his name, it's an honor.
Well, lastly, for people who want to find out more about the fact that you are there and present, where can they go to find out more information about everything you're doing with the Sledgehammers?
So we have our website. It's the sledgehammers.com. And you can read, like, right at the front there, they got our info page with all our stuff. And then there's the contacts. You can reach out to me at Alan Hurlihy, AllenHurlihy @gmail.com. And we will, we'll do everything we can to get you in sleds and just trying to get our name out through just local media and stuff too. So
amazing. Well, congrats on the nomination and all the success thus far. And we'll definitely be watching in the future to see as you continue to grow the visibility and opportunity in the game.
That's what we're after here. If, you know, 10 people come out, this was just incredible. Like, I'm just kind of happy that now our people are starting to realize that, you know, because you're disabled doesn't mean you can't play hockey. Like, come see us. We'll get you in a game.
No question. Thank you so much, Alan.
No problem. Thank you very much.
You can hear the passion in Alan's voice. Definitely a worthy nominee for the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award. As is our next guest, Mark Bergeon, founder of Diversity Athletics Society out in Vancouver, BC. Now, Mark originally was born in London, England, but moved to Canada and, like many Canadian immigrants, fell in love with the sport of hockey. His Diverse Athletics Society is a nonprofit that makes sure that everyone who falls in love with hockey is able to play in it. It's a nonprofit that provides mentorship and athletic development to help kids in the sport. Bergeon himself actually coaches and mentors many of the young diverse athletes, hoping that they will excel in the sport the same way he was able to. At the same time, he's also a board member of BC Hockey and is part of their first ever working group for equity, diversity, and inclusion, which makes recommendations to make sure hockey in BC remains inclusive. I want to hear much more about that work. So let's talk to Mark right now on Going Deep. So Mark, like many immigrants coming to Canada, you end up finding the sport of hockey, but you end up playing it at a high level. Talk to me about your family's ascension and assimilation to the country and how the sport of hockey plays a part in that story.
Well, you know what? I came to Canada when I was born in London, England, came to Canada when I was six. And at that time, my mom, who's from Jamaica, she just figured, you know, discovered, obviously, hockey is a sport that a lot of Canadians do. And back when I was younger, we had all the four seasons. I moved to Winnipeg, Manitoba. We had fall, we had winter, spring, and summer. So we could play a number of sports. I played football, we could run track, we could play soccer and hockey. So when I moved to Manitoba, it was probably one of my first encounters with a lot of snow and the cold. So my mom just said to us, well, we're in Canada now. So she went to Canadian Tire and she got us some hockey sticks and some skates and said that, you know, we have to learn how to skate. I was six when I moved over. That was very new to us. So I wasn't a big fan of the cold or the snow. Hockey was a little different for me, but the cold and the snow I was not a fan of. So she enrolled us in skating lessons and away we went. We just discovered hockey because you go to school, kids are playing, and that's the sport to play in the winter. And in Winnipeg, winters are long and they're very cold.
Yeah. Mom is also from Jamaica and I was born here and I'm not a fan of the cold or the snow. And I just have the blood and not the birth that you do. And your mom decided, okay, how about I go to the place that is the least like Jamaica as possible and take you right to Winnipeg. Certainly there's the temperature difference, but you know, there's a difference because of, you know, who you are and what you look like. In that time, in hockey or otherwise, did you have experiences with racism that were a barrier of entry and assimilating in the way that you'd hoped?
You know, it's and not just hockey, sports, just life in general. In sports, yeah. In hockey, I can't say it was any different than other sports. My attraction to hockey is, you know, it's a great sport. It's I encountered racism in a number of areas, not primarily just in hockey. I think that with where I am today is all hockey. So I don't coach football anymore. I don't coach soccer anymore, lacrosse. I've been coaching hockey for and developing hockey players for, wow, I would say over 15 years exclusively. So it's been a lot. It's been hockey. When I was younger, you know, yeah, I got it. But back in the day, you would just, you kind of suck it up. You just didn't say anything because nobody would really do anything. So, you know, you talk about kids having thick skin. That was primarily one of the reasons why I would think I have thick skin, is because, you know, when you experience it when you're younger, you just take it. Because really, even today, a lot of people don't know what to do in that situation. But back then, not only did people not know what to do, but they really didn't care. So, yeah, I encountered it when I was younger, for sure. You know, in football, I encountered it. I told this story before. You know, you can get football. I was a running back, and you can grapple guys hard, and you can take guys to the ground. And, you know, guys would, you know, get in your face, get in your cage, and spit in your helmet, and they drop the N-word. You would just take it out or your revenge back in the game. Like hockey, there's a lot of fighting. When a guy does something to you, you fight the guy, which from a football background, I think, well, that just makes no sense. So within football, when a guy, you don't see too many fights in football, but within the game, kind of like rugby, you take things out on guys within the game. So if, you know, somebody did something or there was a racial slur, you know, we're not going to go to the ref because he's not going to do anything about it. But you go back to the huddle, you go back to the bench, and you talk to your buddies and you say, okay, number so-and-so, he dropped the N-word on me. So just, you know, just leave him wide open so I can hit him. Or let him, in football, you say, you know, don't block for me. Let him come through the seam and I'll go at him good. But hockey, I find it when guys bump a guy wrong or a player has a nice legal open hit, in hockey, they start to fight, but we couldn't fight it out because there was no fighting, so we took it out in different ways on the field.
Sadly, this is not unique to you and not unique to the time you were coming up in the game. We still see these issues. You are someone now who kids go to for help in dealing with it. Is it different in the way that kids face it now, and how do you help them go through it?
Wow, it's... you know, diversity athletics is because I came from a diverse background. My family is diverse. Kids, I don't know, like it's kids come to me for guidance. Parents do, regardless of background and race. I think I'm just pretty open and understanding with some of the things that kids go through, because I know for myself, my dad dying when I was 14, and needing that guidance through my young athletic life, it kind of wasn't there. So I knew when I was older what I was really missing when I was younger. So I believe that when I coach kids, maybe that's just something that I give off in terms of looking to help and assist. So I have people reach out to me often, whether they be South Asian, Black, or white. It's just, I believe that kids, they go to school and they play sports. That's what they do. That's their life. And once there's something that goes sideways in sports, that's half their life. And that's the fun part of their existence. So for me, I'm very empathetic when a young boy or girl is playing a sport, and for some reason an adult is in the way of their happiness. I've run into it with my coaches. I advocate for kids because I was advocating for myself when I was 15, 16, against coaches who do some of the same things coaches do nowadays. And it bothered me then, and I stuck up for my friends then. And I just believe that's probably why I do it now, because although I'm 55, I've literally been doing advocating for athletes and players since I was 15. So I just think that kids come to me because I truly believe, and I just knew what I wanted when I was younger. And when I started to have kids, I really noticed that gap was in my life when I was younger. So I just feel that I just do my best to help kids through their journey in athletics and whatever I can do to support them, whether it be bouncing things off of me. They need some guidance in a sport. What should I do? Where should I go? Who should I talk to? I just try to get as involved as I can to help out. So I just believe that parents will find that out and kids will just reach out to me, or they'll contact my son. Hey, what's your dad's number? And they'll just text me. So
one of the kids you've been able to help out, and literally not just as a coach, as a mentor, but you know, to help by having in your house, is Caden Lidstrom. What's that relationship mean to you? And I know the goal isn't to get kids into the National Hockey League, but given the summer ahead of him and him potentially hearing his name called quite early, what does that signify in terms of the work that you're doing?
You know, obviously that wasn't the goal. Is to just help, when Caden stayed with us, just to help him on his journey and get him where he needed to be. I know that he and I spoke a lot. We spoke a lot about non-hockey things. He reminded me a lot of myself when I first met him. And the goal for me with Caden was ultimately just to free him of anything that may have been bothering him, whether I knew what that was or not, just so that he could throw everything he could into hockey, which is what he loves to do. Whether it be, you know, he needs ice, Mark, I need ice, and we would get ice, and we would go train, we would go to the track, we would always talk about being bigger, faster, stronger. We'd always talk about, you know, maybe he's playing behind a line that he shouldn't. And it's the mental toughness and it's just being patient that I wanted Caden to understand. And I know from my background, the things that I wish I had heard when I was his age, and those are the things that I wanted to make sure that I continue to work with him on and talk to him about on and off the ice, so that he... so that it could work out for him. I'm glad it's worked out for the way he is. He's a hardworking kid, loves the sport. And that relationship is just like with all the kids that I either work with or just, you know, I mean, just know and can give some support to. That relationship with Caden is, I'm just happy and it's special that it's working out the way that it is so far for him. And, you know, a lot of people think that it's all about the physical, but I got to tell you, so many kids just call me because they need, it's mental health. Like, kids just need somebody that they can trust and that's got their back. And for me, that was important when I was younger. So when kids come to me and parents do, I just make sure that the parents know that, you know what, your kid, if he comes to me, he's probably stuck with me forever. And it doesn't really matter. They've got my back. I remember telling Caden when he first came to my house, it's probably day two, I just said to him, I said, if anybody F's with you, they have to deal with me. And that's how I treat every kid, especially when they're living in my house. If you're living in my house, you're one of my kids. And to Caden, he's like my son because he's been here for so long. And, you know, I just know what his goals are and what he wants out of life and how I can be a part of that and help him get where he wants to be. Then that's what I'll do for him.
Well, he is part of your growing legacy in the game, in the community. In a way, you and the work you're doing is part of Willie O'Ree's legacy in the game and in the community. Now that you are nominated for an award named after him, given the struggle that he had to go through. What does that mean to you?
You know, it was out of the blue. It just kind of blew me away. And, you know, there were some days where, you know, people were saying such nice things to me after they found out, and I would get texts, and I sometimes couldn't look at my phone because the people were saying such nice things. And I just coach or teach or mentor because that's just what I just do. It wasn't a job application for it. It was just something that I do. It means a lot because I think of, you know, hockey now, regardless of your background, it's not an easy sport. It's very old school. It's having a hard time adapting to change in any area. So for him, I think when he was playing way back in the day and some of the things he may have encountered just to continue to stick it out, man, you got to have some thick skin. You got to love what you're doing, have some determination. And it's very inspirational to know that, like, if a guy like him, if he hadn't existed, the influence he had on other kids and other people to get involved in the sport, or even look at the sport like, oh, there's this, you know, black guy, Willie O'Ree playing. People back then, that were, you know, may have, you know, perked up and looked at the sport. For me, I'm super honored that, I'm just honored. It was kind of like mind-blowing at first because I was thinking, like, I don't do this to be recognized. I just do it. So it's extremely honorable for them to look at somebody like me who's doing what I do and look at the things. I wouldn't call it work because I don't find it. I don't feel like it's work that I could be in a situation like this. So, yeah, I'm just I'm extremely thankful that what I'm doing is, you know, recognized.
Well, if people recognize the work and want to help you with it, where can they go to find more information and support Diversity Athletic Society?
You know, we're on Instagram, Diversity Athletics Society, diversityathletics.org. We're there. You can find me at BC Hockey. I'm a board member of BC Hockey. You can track me down there. You can just find me basically, I guess, anywhere now. Some kids find me. I don't know how they track me down, but they track me down. So, yeah, diversityathletics.org is definitely a place. And obviously, I'm here in the province of British Columbia at BC Hockey. And if you were to message BC Hockey, as I've received before, looking to get a hold of Mark Bergen, you'll get a hold of me.
Well, I suspect many more will be trying to get a hold of you, some maybe for help and support and guidance, but I think also many just to thank you and to see how they can pull the rope with you and continue to support everything that you're doing. So thank you on behalf of people who love the game, because your work is really important, even though it's not easy.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it. I appreciate the time.
Thank you so much to Mark and all of our guests. Thank you for, one, the tireless work that they do, and thank you to the NHL and Hyundai for shining a light on that work, making sure that it inspires others. And if you feel compelled, hopefully you can make the same sort of change in your own community, whether it's via the game of hockey or otherwise. Don't just stop there. We encourage you to vote for the Community Hero Award. You heard three candidates coming out of Canada who are all worthy of your support and your vote. All you got to do to vote is go to nhl.com/OREAward. Voting is open until May 19th, so make sure you go there quickly and vote. Again, you can find the hyperlink for the ability to vote in the bio of this podcast, nhl.com/OREAward. Thank you for listening. We've got more great conversations coming for you in this very place soon.